So you think we just listen to the Patimokkha, the Samanera Sikkha, and it is something that we do regularly, and we get experience both with chanting it and with listening to it, and also we get experience with bridging the time in between the Patimokkhas in a skillful way, so that the things that we are reminded of when listening to the Patimokkha, they don't take us by surprise. So we gradually build up from this kind of like edge posts, like in between, we build up a pathway of from samana sanya, like that we would see ourselves as a samana, somebody who is peaceful and somebody who's restrained, who's got patience, endurance, and he's got like a sense of like what I talked about this morning as well, hiri otapa. So we try to practice taking the significant edge poles or the points that we can easily capture and fill in the gaps, and then from fortnight to fortnight, from season to season, from pansa to pansa, from year to year, actually we fulfill the role of a samana. And then if we were to think of it in the first place, like thinking of the finished product, what should an ideal samana be like? It's quite intimidating. If you think of some of the heroes of the legends that you've read about, incredible stories about, like for example, Bokam Kanin and Kong Jiam sitting meditation until the termites eat up half of his leg. So these astounding stories, they're kind of far away somehow. And or like the reckless effort of Lopu Man, Lopu Sao, and all the Kuba chants. It's kind of like we don't meet them so often. These days we meet Kuba chants coming in vehicles, and they're kind of lined up in the food line, and they're having their cameras. I don't want to be negative about it, but like there's a different feel to it. It's not like that down to earth, got like hero that we meet every day. But what we meet is somebody, usually in a sangha, who's got gentle manners and who's friendly and very much appreciative of any bit of progress that we make and any bit of like effort that we put forth. Even the monks that we find kind of strange or like a bit kind of over the top in the kind of and the way they conduct themselves, they talk a lot. There's some kubajans in the Papong scene that are microphone grabbers. But when you meet them, they're personally very encouraging, and they wish the best to you, and they give us that warmth of like this is a family. Like we've got some people that are maybe not the greatest heroes, but they're all trying hard and they're all making effort, and we support each other with that. One of the sayings that I remember Lumpa Tongchan was saying while he was here was like Papong is like a big bamboo. There's they kind of like it grows together in a bunch, and then when the storm comes the whole thing kind of like swayed back and forth, and the various little sticks stay kind of like They support each other, whereas like it's not like a single pole or a single tall tree that then falls, because it's kind of top heavy and gets pushed down, but like it's a whole bunch, a whole group of people that are more or less supportive of each other. And I think that's like how I feel about the Sangha. We have to be supportive of each other and not be kind of competing or jealous or things like that with each other. And if one bhikkhu shows some weak points, we support him with those weak points. And if somebody shows some strong points, we anumodana, we the strong points. And we build up a culture of growing together, because all of us are pretty new to this, and some of our idealism may not ever be met by our kind of capacities. Looking at what kind of baggage we bring along, there's a lot of stuff that we carry around, just a sense of who we are and what we mean to have and be. Like, so much dominant in our minds that we sometimes are not even aware of it, that we're actually craving to become, and just to be normal, and just to be friendly, and just to be supportive of each other. I think that's the way out for somebody who's got this certain kind of subconscious eagerness in there. Yet you read the scriptures about striving, and we chanted the Dhammapada a while ago, and the Buddha has this famous quote, and where the flesh and blood dries up in the body, and the efforts don't stand still until he's attained what is to be attained by manly strength, and so forth. So Dhammapada, or heroic stories of legendary figures like the Bhagavan, or some of the Geji Ajahns, they do also serve a purpose. They give us some illustration, give us some kind of a picture. And some of the stories, if you discover the scene around it a bit, they become really alive, actually. I remember reading that passage in Lhunpo Li's biography, when he said he was, as a novice or a young monk, Upatthakin Lhunpo Man, he was peeping through the keyhole. And these little sweet little scenes, you got the great teacher and the sweet little disciple that is kind of too timid to really kind of approach the teacher, and then just finds a way through the back door and just kind of spies him out. And again, they speak about the human side of the teachers. And I don't think that Lhunpo Man was always fierce. I don't think that anybody would have stayed with him if he was always fierce. He must have had this kind of underlying good vibes around him. Otherwise, the fierceness doesn't come along. Whereas when we want to be fierce and we want to be tough, usually we forget that underlying warmth and support, create competition and create some unnecessary conflict. So, not to pretend to be anybody that one isn't, just to do things naturally and have that awareness and confidence in what we're doing in between the peaks and in between the edge poles of that moment. Situations that is just right. We're just doing the things accordingly to what is needed. I think that's the greatest effort the simile of Ajahn Chah with the dripping water. You get some points that are kind of moving in time, but actually you gradually increase the frequency of recognizing these things, and they turn into a stream, and they support each other, or they link up to each other. And it's not that one can say one of those points, those drips of leaking faucet is particularly more important than another one. They just come, and they just kind of watch, and the whole thing turns into a continuum. And I think that's what we have with our monastic rhythm, where there's certain peaks and certain phases and certain outstanding events. For example, for our Patimokkha chant, it is an outstanding event to chant Patimokkha, definitely. It takes a lot of effort then to get to that point, and then afterwards there's a feeling of now there's a break, and then and after due time there will be again the excitement around it. I know that very well for myself. And so it's a kind of up and down with certain parameters, and we can try to work to to fill the gaps between two events, between the same period that we're going through again. So for example, it's upcoming Visakha Puja, and how many times have we already remembered the Buddha's Supreme Enlightenment, the Anuttara Samma Sambodhi. You know, we have like so many times like being, are making points of being devotional to the greatest human beings, human being that mankind has ever seen, and yet in between we just drop it again, and we can go back to superficiality or so. So we can't just kind of neglect that there's outstanding events and that there's special situations like that inspire us particularly, but then there's also the ordinary stuff in between. And if we can live in this samana form, and then we gradually link it to each other, we gradually bridge the highlights with the low sides, and eventually we discover that whatever there is, and whether it's high or low, if we realize it as it comes, then we get some insight there, and we don't have a shock or a depression or an elation or like a kind of like a false pretending of taking things either too serious or too light. So that inbuilt structure as a reminder, and then a continuous like a reviving of one's aspiration, and a continuous experience of the time before and after and in between. It's like when people in the West they do these meditation retreats and they throw in all their resources for 2 weeks or 1 weekend, and afterwards they get completely irritated. And then the advice would be do a bit more in between. Do a bit more of the kind of the activity in between, and don't take that meditation peak too serious. Otherwise, the higher you fly, the lower you fall. And so, just kind of keep going in between, and finding the underlying background just as important as we're having some kind of highlights. And I think that's very, very nice in our tradition that there's a de-emphasis of the special things. Like, so even Lopo Cha, I think, was very, very keen on not making himself too special. And I think that many of his disciples have also picked up on that. And there's also, instead of having one person stick out, we have the whole Sangha kind of like bunched together, and Ajahn Chah was quite able to pass on his authority to the Sangha when one hears about the accounts of like how he set things up, so not to kind of jump to the most prominent things only, but just to look at what builds them up and what makes them work. I think that's a great experience, a great mindfulness training, and it's amazing how much experience one builds up with the daily life and the daily rhythm, or the fortnightly rhythm, or the weekly rhythm. Say another example is like when we do the one pratne sajik. It's kind of a thing that has a certain build-up, or like a certain, it's definitely a highlight, and then one structures one's week a bit around that, and then one gets into that feeling, okay, yeah, if I really want to put forth effort on the one pra, gotta be a bit like kind of preparing myself a bit, like, you know, kind of not overly agitated, but like have a build-up of energy for that, and then and at least that's how I felt. Like you know, if you want to meditate all night and not fall asleep, you've got to make it a bit of a special kind of thing for yourself. Otherwise, you kind of like doze back into drowsiness. And sure enough, and that then done repeatedly, especially when things repeatedly, you get to level them down and then fill up the stuff in between. So the middle of the week also is like already kind of and has a significance, not only the day before one prayer or the day on one prayer, whether you drink coffee or not, or whether you make something especially inspiring on that day in order to have the momentum. It's just like doing it over and over. The things that have been once very exciting, they become a routine, and the things in between, they can actually rise up to that level. And it's really amazing how many different rhythms we have. For example, I kind of like personally, I fell into a certain rhythm right now with like almost continually in the last few years in May, going back to Europe to visit my relatives, my mother, and it wasn't really planned, but like it is amazing how quickly these things come up again, and how actually unexciting it is. Like when you first go home, it's very very kind of prominent. You feel it's a challenge. You feel like you've got to be prepared. You see the vineyard, you see the relatives. You see they don't think to care and whatnot, and you want to impress them. You want to be kind of the greatest Buddhist monk ever. For them at least. And right now I just feel like, okay, yeah, going again, coming again, and they're living in a different context, and I'm coming from a different thing, but like you find ways of adapting and adjusting, and the excitement before or after is just after getting into a certain routine, even on a yearly basis, it's not there anymore. And I think that's generally what one can observe, that like I said, the hype around certain things gets less, and they come and come and come, and then you actually get the feeling of maybe eventually coming to that normality, whatever comes, if it's something spectacular or unspectacular, it's just there and you're just doing it. So the phrase that I like to quote a lot as well is like the thing of simply doing one's duty. And I just remembered that like our friend from Laos, Kumbhadeng, he was giving the Dhamma talk on one prayer, and all he said about for 20 minutes encouraging the lay people to do their duty. Tamnati, tamnati. And you'd think he'd have something more to say, some tricks about overcoming the hindrances, or some fascinating story about like how he came from Laos to Thailand or whatever, like something about the suffering over there. Or so he just kind of kept saying tamnati, tamnati, and I actually really like that. If somebody just kind of gives you that kind of dhamma, for me it's trustworthy. It's much more in tune with the needs of a normal monk than impressing and boasting and telling great stories. And great stories, like, it's funny enough, from the Vinaya, you're not allowed to tell your own great stories anyway. And you're not supposed to kind of make much of that, and not supposed to kind of tell anything that was really great to lay people or so, you know, like, you're also not supposed to tell other great stories. Like, what's the point of it? Somebody always talks about like other people's like whatever psychic powers or Deva stories or so. It's always borrowed things. So what else is there to talk about? It's like like normal things that we're working with, sharing the stuff that one needs to fill out the empty spaces between the big things. And I feel we can be authentic and supportive for each other with that, and have a sense of that's nothing to hide away with. If one just does his duties very nicely and is a fellow bhikkhu, fellow samanera, fellow pakao, fellow nun and sister, and just simply does things nicely, correctly, evenly, steadily, like continuously. And that's also Ajahn Chah, a steady practice, continuous practice. ขยันก็ทำขี้เกียจก็ทำอย่างนี้ก็ได้ you're lazy you do it over the year like energetic you're diligent you do it that's one of the things like some of the sima stones so something that all the kuba chants that point out that there's actually not much of a choice one has to be a samana all the time not only in the inspirational moments not only at the patimokkha not only when one is the one that is chanting the patimokkha not only when one is the one that is whatever meditating all night or whenever one is the one that gets on a special kind of like teaching trip saying going to a certain monastery where you get greeted by the Lompa and that's not the only time one should feel one is really worthy of this samana thing. It's much more like when you're walking through the forest, when you're going back to your kuti, when you're taking your bows and ropes to the sala in the morning, do you feel like actually this is real practice. I'm not just going to do my utmost, most beautiful duty in being a samana. Just kind of walking to the sala, back and forth, wonderful, with all the kind of like in the dark, for example, you see the moon every now and again, and then the sunlight on the way back. What I find, like, sometimes, you know, like, you think just that is an achievement, to be able to walk through the forest skillfully without the anxiety or without the kind of feelings that one had when one first came here, just to enjoy as your natural habitat, as your natural home, and just walk back and forth, and whether it's stuffy, whether it's rainy, you can deal with anything. These things I find really important, that one has like a feeling of like, yeah, I can do all this. I can do all this regularly, practically, and not finding ways of evading certain parts of monastic life that one doesn't like, or so just kind of going through it all and having an even mind of appreciation and support for the others. And if you see somebody else struggling, then you get this empathy for that person. Like he's not kind of really immersed in this kind of feeling of I'm doing the right thing here, and maybe doubts or so, and just take him under the wing and just kind of like do things together, offer him something, offer him a smile, offer him some of your candy, something like that. Cheers people up. So small practices and naturalness and things that are common and that are simple duties, I think they go a long way. And even the outstanding things that are in the tradition, like somebody chanting the Patimokkha, achieving something like a performance, for example, like we gradually level into that whole thing, it becomes a continuum. And then we actually kind of are open and we get lots of teachings all the time from things that are happening. So these are my Dhamma reflections for today. And yeah, anyone.